My next guest is Barbara King, professor of anthropology at the College of William and Mary and author of Evolving God, A Provocative View of the Origins of Religion. What? Religion? Provocative? No! That needs some explanation. Dr. King, thanks for being here.
Hi, Faith. Thanks for inviting me.
You have this argument about how apes are our closest ancestor, and they're capable of empathy and meaning-making, and that evolved and generated humans' relationship with God. Is that about how you'd say it in a nutshell?
Yes, that's pretty close. I would make one correction, if I may.
Please.
And that is that chimpanzees are not our ancestors, but they are our closest living relatives. And I've watched them for many years. And what's so neat about them is when you watch them, you get some clues as to how our earliest human ancestors did live, very emotionally, very connected to each other.
I loved in your book how you shared some stories of chimpanzees and other kind of apes demonstrating empathy and emotion for each other. Can you share perhaps one of your favorite stories?
Yes, sure. Let me take you to Africa for this anecdote. It's a country in West Africa called Ivory Coast in the rainforest. And picture a female who has just been killed by a bite to the neck by a leopard. So her body is laying out in the middle of this community of chimpanzees, some of whom are related to each other, others are friends and associates. And there's an adult male. Yeah, these guys are male dominant. And this male called Brutus is keeping away all the youngsters from this dead body except one. He lets through Tarzan. Tarzan is Tina's younger brother, age 5, and they've been pretty close throughout their lives.
Mm.
Tarzan is allowed to approach the body and pull on the hand of his dead sister, and it was really very touching. What I think is important is that Brutus was able to recognize that bond and make an empathetic decision based on what he saw.
In your book, you talk about belongingness a lot. Could you define that for us?
Yeah, I think of belongingness as just the need to matter to other people. It's what drives us to care that our families, our partners, our lovers, our close associates like us and we feel comfortable with them. We have a very long evolutionary history of caring about emotions and sociality, and I think that's part of what drove the evolution of religion.
And you use the word belongingness to describe humans' relationship with God now. Did you coin that term in order to avoid difficult words like spirituality and religion and just a landmine of other loaded things?
Oh, no, I love landmines of loaded things. I use religion and spirituality in the book, too. Belongingness just seemed to me to capture something that is essentially primate, that is millions of years old, about us. So when I talk about apes' empathy, I don't want to say that apes are religious. I want to say that they have some building blocks of religion, and that over time, belongingness evolves, and it makes us smarter and gets us in touch with sacred realms after our brains grow and develop and mature. So it's a really long process I'm talking about.
What are some of the earliest examples of religious practice in humans?
Well, if we're talking about humans in terms of Homo sapiens, that's one thing. What I do in Evolving God is to trace back to, say, Australopithecines, our human ancestors at 3 million years ago. And there's some very interesting material culture, in other words, artifacts that you can pick up that are around the skeletons of these ancestors, that show that they're beginning to really care about something beyond survival, symbolic human faces that they carry around, that some people in rocks, that some people have been suggesting might be the earliest examples of an interest in the afterlife. But if we can move and fast forward a little bit, by the time we get to Neanderthals and Homo sapiens, maybe 100,000 years ago, we see very interesting ritual and symbols around death, for example, that I think is an important indicator of the sacred realm.
Barbara, if you could please hang on a bit, we need to take a break. When we return, we'll keep talking about how spirituality came from apes. Plus, Oh No, I mean music from a man named Oh No. That's all ahead on Fair Game from PRI. I'm Faith Saley, and this is Fair Game from PRI. I'm with Barbara King, and we're talking about her book, Evolving God. Barbara, before the break, we were talking about belongingness, and you're connecting it with the evolution of religion. When you look at the world, obviously religion is responsible for a lot of wars, and it's often used as a wedge issue to separate voters. So it seems to be sometimes not about belonging, but excluding. What do you make of that?
Yes, you're right. I think the other side of belongingness is the idea that social groups need to exclude others based on fear, xenophobia, and that is kind of belongingness run amok. It's something that we do see throughout evolutionary history, and it's just two sides of the same coin. So I'm very interested in looking for the archaeological signature of compassion, but I also see the archaeological signature of, for example, cannibalism and exclusion. So it's all there. It's all part of the same thing.
I was really taken in the last part of your book with the anthropological look at Americans as a religious people and the statistics you offer that show us as a country to be very committed to our religion. You put in an example that almost 50% of Britons believe in evolution, and only 13% of Americans believe that we could have evolved without any help from God. What do you think it is about Americans particularly who feel like they need a certain sort of Christian-oriented kind of belongingness?
Oh, if I had the answer to that, I would be really on a fast track to fame. It is true that in America, six times as many people believe in angels as they believe in the evolutionary process not aided by God. And I think what I'm really trying to say is, first of all, the long evolutionary history that I'm talking about had a tipping point at some point, right? When we're talking about Homo sapiens, that really became interested not just in the belongingness we talked about, but the mysteries of life that they express through burials and art images. And that if we understand that we have this evolutionary history, that our spirituality evolved, we don't have to choose between evolution and God.
Is what you're saying in your scientific community and among your colleagues, is what you're saying revolutionary and controversial?
Well, I very much wish to argue with the dominant theorizing about the origins of religion. That is, there's a God gene that makes us spiritual. So I'm trying to, in fact, go back to an anthropological revolution of an earlier time that speaks to me, that brings back flesh and blood people and emotion and caring, and doesn't make us all about our genes and our brain modules. So in some ways, it's currently revolutionary, but it has very deep anthropological roots that mean a lot to me.
How do you, in your personal life, combine science and religion?
What I say to my students at William & Mary, my wonderful, bright students, when they walk in the door, is that you may choose between God and evolution, and that's fine either way. But you don't have to choose, that there are many, many ways to reconcile spirituality and faith. I feel that I'm a spiritual person because I'm connected to other animals, other evolutionary processes in the world. To me, that makes me feel spiritual. But my main point is really not a personal one. It's saying that evolution is part of being spiritual and that it's a very beautiful thing to feel connected in that way. And evolution is not about meaninglessness. It's not about being random. There is a purpose and a beauty to our lives.
Well, you say you don't fear landmines. So I have to ask in another way, do you think that we humans created God, or we became evolved enough to recognize that there is a God? What do you personally think?
I think that in that case, the only answer is to accept and embrace the beauty of agnosis, and by that I mean not knowing. This is not a question that I can possibly answer. What I wish to do is to look at our evolutionary history and not to try to answer big questions. I don't think that science can answer big questions about religion of that nature. I think it can illuminate how we evolve to be spiritual, but that landmine I'm going to throw right back at you.
No, but do you choose not to answer that because of what you do for a living, or also personally that you embrace agnosis?
I I don't answer personal questions about religious beliefs, and that sets me apart from people like Richard Dawkins, who's happy to tell you that everyone who's not an atheist is an idiot. What I am happy to say is that I can see beauty in atheism, agnosis, and deep faith, and that I am not going to talk about what I think because I want to remain open to all those views.
Now, you mentioned your very bright students at William and Mary. Very quickly, there were a couple of quick lessons that you put in your book that I appreciated. One is, can you tell us the difference between monkeys and apes once and for all? And number two, will you tell us what you write in capital letters on the blackboard about sharing a common ancestor?
Yeah, the quick and dirty test. Apes don't have tails.
Done.
Monkeys do. Go
Okay.
to a zoo, try it out. Big capital letters, we did not evolve from apes. We shared a common ancestor with apes. And this is something I'm willing to come out of the closet on. Yeah, I believe in evolution.
Woo, we got it. All right. I
All right.
sort of suspected that, Barbara.
You did.
I
Well,
did.
you're right, Faith.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Faith.
My guest has been Barbara King, author of Evolving God, a provocative view on the origins of religion. Thank you so much for being here. It was definitely enlightening.
Thank you.